Good evening. My name is Carlos Mariani. I'm from St. Paul, but I'm no stranger to the North Side. In fact, I have a lot of good friends. I've done a lot of good work with over the years here, and it's a privilege to me always to be in this neighborhood. And I know on behalf of both our House committees, it's a privilege for these committees to be here, and they're very much looking forward to this discussion. So thank you for inviting us out here. Thank you for having us in your home. This evening. This is a formal gathering of two House committees, the E12 Education Policy Committee, that it's my privilege to chair, and the K-12 Finance Committee, which is chaired by my good friend, Representative Cindy Flyley. I should be using this, shouldn't I? I'm going to be telling people to use this. Cindy Flyley from Roseville. Today we're going to mostly listen from the community on issues of concern to you, on education issues. You should know that we have really tried hard this year to get this legislature started by focusing on educational disparities, or what some people call the quote-unquote achievement gap. The fact that in many of our schools, unfortunately, we see great disparities in our educational outcomes and opportunities that are determined by race, income, and by geography. It's something that does not speak well to our values as Minnesotans. It's something that we are committed to doing something proactively and powerfully about. So we're going to want to be hearing from individuals about educational disparity issues, but we also want to be able to hear from you on your hopes and your dreams, and really also approach this conversation from an assets-based conversation. So often, policy members attempt to engage the public on deficit-based thinking. And I know one thing about the North Side from hanging out here with friends for many years and many of our other communities, and that is that there are wonderful assets and wonderful hopes and dreams that exist here. It's our job as policymakers to close that loop between those aspirations and good public policy. So we want to hear your ideas on how to make educational experiences for your students that much better. It's important for us to be able to listen and engage with as many people as possible. And I know there's a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, a lot of folks are going to want to speak. I'm going to ask you to keep your comments brief, powerful but brief, and do it in honor of your brothers and sisters who also need to have time to share information with the committee. So we do have lots of people. We will have a system of sort of checking the time. So as you come up, we'll be reminding you of how much time you have left. So with that, I am going to turn this over to my good friend and colleague, Representative Mindy Briley, who is chair of our House K-12 Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. It's my privilege to give the rules for the night. Then the legislators will quickly introduce themselves, including those that are not up at the table. And then I will turn the meeting over to your representative, Representative Dominguez, to my right. And he will introduce all the dignitaries in the room and then chair the meeting. So, first of all, we're going to have a half hour with more formal presentations from the Minneapolis public schools, and we're going to keep them to that because we want to hear from the people in the room. And but they're going to talk about the academic and student support services, successes, and challenges. And then we will go to the audience members who have signed up. Some people have been calling in this week who knew about this meeting. Some people have signed up tonight. If you haven't yet signed up, where is the place to sign up? Way back at the door. So if you haven't signed up and you want to and you're already seated, you can just go back to the door and sign up. And if you don't want to speak publicly but you'd like to leave us with a message, there are comment cards there. If we don't get to everybody, you can also fill out comment cards, and we will all get copies of all of them and be able to read them tomorrow. Now I'm going to, and I would just like to reiterate the very short testimony, because we do have a lot of people. But that we have the police person here to my right who will have to say when people's time is up. I have the legislators all around the room, and we just are going to keep you to saying only your name and your main city, because otherwise legislators could take up the whole time. I will just say I'm from Roseville. I'm 10 minutes north of the Capitol. I used to teach in St. Paul Public Schools at J.J. Hill. I grew up in Rochester, and oops, I'm not supposed to say all that. That was a bad example.
You want me to give a good example? Okay. Well, I'm Lynn Carlson, State Representative for Crystal Robbins Hill, Golden Valley, and Prairie New Hope.
Representative Jim Dabney, South Minneapolis, and an NPS parent.
State Representative Tim Faust from Moran and Pine City.
Representative Robert Brown, and my large city would be Albert Lea. I'm in the southern eastern part of Minnesota.
I'm State Representative Paul Marker. I'm from Dilworth, which is in west central Minnesota.
Sandra Aronson from Princeton, Minnesota. I'm a retired high school English teacher.
Good evening. I'm Denise Dietrich, and I represent all Champlain and a portion of Coon Rapids.
Lynn Wardlow, I represent 38B, Egan Street South.
Carolyn Lane, I'm from Columbia Heights for the area.
State Representative Andy Welty from the Rochester area, and I also represent smaller communities.
Representative Marcia Swales, I'm a high school teacher from Woodbury.
I'm Representative John Benson, a longtime retired teacher now, from Minnetonka, Plymouth.
Hi, I'm Nora Spawick from Maplewood, and I also represent Oakdale, and I also the chair of the Early Childhood Committee. Great to see you.
I'm Linda Slocum. I represent East Richfield, East and Central Bloomington. I'm a Minneapolis Public Schools teacher.
I'm Representative Dean Erdahl, from Meeker County, and six townships in Wake County, largest city being Litchfield, and taught for 35 years in London Spicer.
Hi, good evening. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein, District 60B, the south side of Minneapolis, and thank you for turning out in big numbers here in Minneapolis tonight.
Good evening, I'm Sandra Peterson, Representative Sandra Peterson, Plymouth, New Hope, and Crystal, and also a retired teacher.
Good evening, Representative John Ward from Brainerd, Baxter Lakes area, a retired teacher.
State Representative Bud Heidgerkin, representing like 15 school districts, and I represent rural Minnesota, and I represent more cows than I represent people.
I'm Representative Tom Tilbury, and I represent Fridley, parts of Fridley, and Spring Lake Park, Moundsview, and a little portion of Blaine, and I happen to be a counselor at Roseville Area High School.
Hello, Representative Terry Morrow from the St. Peter Nicola County area.
I'm Representative Will Morgan from Burnsville.
Last but not least, I'm Representative Bob Detmer from the Forest Lake area. I'm also a teacher and a high school wrestling coach.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And before I turn the meeting now over, oh, I'm sorry. Joe, do you want to come up? If there are any other legislators while Representative Mulery is coming up, please come up too.
I'm Joe Mullery. I represent all of North Minneapolis, north of 26th Avenue North. I'm not a teacher, but my dad taught at Patrick Henry High School for 39 years. I think most people are familiar with Henry.
Joe,
there's
chairs up here. Why don't you come up? Yeah. Before I turn the meeting over to Representative Dominguez, one postscript to what I said. if anybody doesn't get to talk tonight, there will be a subcommittee on learning, disparities in student support services that will be chaired by Representative Dominguez. So we will be taking further testimony on some of the topics for tonight if you don't get your chance. And now I will turn the meeting over to Representative Dominguez, who I have to say we are enjoying very, very much at the legislature. I think those of you who are represented by him are wonderfully lucky, and here he is.
Well, thank you. Actually, this is beautiful. It's a nice turnout tonight, and I really thank you folks for coming out and hearing the K-12 finance and policy. This is what it's all about, bringing us to the community, and this is the first time this has ever happened, I believe, in any community. So could you give the committee a round of applause for coming out tonight? Again, that's one of my dreams, to have folks like these folks that are making decisions for our kids in the state of Minnesota as far as education, to really listen. And we do have a very good committee here, both finance and policy, that really want to take an opportunity to listen to you folks. You folks are the ones that we are serving. And so, again, thank you for coming out. Right now, I also like to recognize the Minneapolis School Board members, along with the superintendent, Mr. Green. Are they here? Will they just rise and be Superintendent Green? Also, I'd like to recognize one of our own that's at the Capitol, Senator Patricia Torres. I know Linda Higgins, our senator here in District 58, is on her way. She had another meeting, so she's working very hard, and hopefully she will be here. So she sends her regards up front. Also, we'd like to recognize City Council members, Paul Ostro and Diane Hofstedt, for showing up. They're out there in the audience. And so now we really like to thank the facilities here at the Urban League, which is called Gleason Glover Center. That's Gary Sutter Center is what we really called it. Again, thank you for coming. We have our honorable past representative here, who served honorably for 58B for some time. Where's he at? Where's that Greg Gray? He's in the audience there that wants to speak to us today. He's right now representing Clarence Hightower, so if you would please come forward.
Good evening. It is absolutely great to be here this evening on such a cold night. I will abide by our chair's recommendation and keep my comments extremely brief. My name is Gregory Gray, and I have the privilege here of being a consultant with Minneapolis Urban League. As was mentioned, the Urban League CEO is Clarence Hightower. He was unable to be here this evening, but he did want to extend his regards to you for taking the time to be here in this community. Many of you probably don't know that this Urban League Center, the Glover Studdard Center, was built in part with state funds. And one of the reasons that we're so happy is that one of our goals, one of our missions, has been to make sure that public officials and leadership, people in leadership positions like yourselves, are accessible to the public, accessible to people in communities and poor communities like this. And so every time we get an opportunity to allow the general public to come into contact, to ask their questions, to get responses directly, we feel that we've accomplished part of that mission, and in so doing have utilized state funds in an efficient manner. Before I give just a couple brief remarks on behalf of Minneapolis Urban League, I did want to offer a couple personal remarks. I'd certainly be remiss if I did not say how proud I am to see my good friends, Carlos Mariani, and Mindy Greiling, both as chairs of this committee, and it's been a long time coming. Aside from partisanship, I've worked with them for many years, and I just have great respect for their integrity and their hard work. And I think people of Minnesota, and certainly the communities that they serve, are well served by having their leadership. And I wish them the very, very best in the new role that they have. With regards to the Minneapolis Urban League, though, let me make just two quick observations in the time that I have. All of us could sit here and debate for a long time about different aspects of education, but I think there are a couple things that are very clear, at least that we've come to think are very clear here at the Urban League. One is the fact that educational proficiency is not uniform. As was mentioned, there is an achievement gap. That achievement gap has been around for an extended period of time, and we all struggle with how we're going to rectify, how we're going to reduce that gap. Well, one of the conclusions that we've come to here at the Urban League, and it's probably not very startling, is that the best way to reduce the gap is to make sure no gap exists in the first place. And the way that we can do that, and we all know what the solutions are, but one of them is early childhood education, valuing and funding early childhood education, and all-day kindergarten programs. We know that these programs work. There are research out there that says that these programs work. The question is what resources we have and what resources we will bring to bear to make sure that those programs are accessible not just to inner city kids, but to kids throughout the state who need these programs. Secondly, and also not very startling, is the fact that we know that kids who don't have good nutrition programs, kids who come from substandard housing, kids who have to grapple with drugs and gang violence are not going to be where they should be in terms of being focused on their educational programs. So although it's outside the reach, in many cases, of this committee or these committees to deal with some of those issues, we at the Minneapolis Urban League hope that as you go through the extensive debating process that takes place on the Minnesota House of Representatives floor, that you'll keep in mind that this is more than just lower class sizes. This is more than just additional funding for educational programs specifically. There are other systemic problems that have to be dealt with if we're going to have kids ready and able to concentrate and do the work in the curriculums that we all want them to succeed at. In closing, let me just say again, I understand how difficult your job is. And I've often said since leaving the Minnesota House that my time there was dealing with one of the most dysfunctional families in Minnesota. But having said that, it was also a great honor to have the opportunity to work on behalf of the people of the state of Minnesota. I'm also happy to say that the vast majority, if not all, of the representatives that I dealt with day to day, even though we came at the problem from different ideologies and different perspectives, all in their heart had the best interests of the state of Minnesota in mind. So I understand where you're coming from. I hope you build coalitions and consensus, because the problem is just too big to ignore and to let stand for another year. I wish you the very best on the work that you have. If there's anything we at the Minneapolis Urban League can do to assist you, please let us know. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I also would like to introduce a few folks. Our school board, the chair, Pam Costain, who's in the audience. Pam, welcome. I also like to introduce Brian Elliott and Kim Ellison, who are here on behalf of Keith Ellison. They're out there. If you get a chance, Keith Ellison's congressional office is upstairs. So Brian said the door is open, so please do that. Also, we'd like to introduce a gentleman that has been our past governor for some time. We welcome him. He's involved with many, many issues and continuously do that. We've had several discussions with this individual. I'm proud to introduce this individual, actually, because he has shown that he's working in a bipartisan manner today. Past Governor Honorable Albert Cui. So with that, again, we welcome each and every one of you to this hearing. Just one rule that I got a note on is that we failed to mention that each individual has 2 minutes because there's so many people that want to come up to the mic to get out their discussion. Again, we're here to listen. We're here to take notes. And believe us, we are here to work for you folks in this community and all communities around, as they mentioned, where the districts that they do come from. We are here to again, listen and be able to move the agendas for you folks that are looking at, as Greg Gray mentioned, early child development, all-day kindergarten, nutritional programs. We have several bills now that are being introduced, and we want your support in moving these bills. So with that, is there any other House folks? I thought I'd seen some that came in. No? We'd also like to take this time to thank Education Minnesota. They're here to listen also, take notes of them. So with that, we're here to listen to the first presenter, Bernadette Johnson, who is the Chief Economic Officer of the Minneapolis Public Schools. Welcome.
Thank you.
One rule. We have the presenters, they have 20 minutes, so they will be total. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairman, first of all, thank you for allowing us an opportunity tonight to address you on issues of education, especially as it relates to the Minneapolis Public Schools. I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce my colleague, Chief of School Support, Eleanor Coleman, who will bring some brief comments as well. The Minneapolis Public Schools, we believe that students deserve a world-class education that prepares them for the future. And we believe that this outreach tonight signals to the community that you are invested in supporting our work around academic achievement. We believe that this will be...
Excuse me, could you speak into the mic? Thank you.
Oh, wrong mic. Sorry. Thank you. Well, thank you for your presence here tonight, and we believe that this outreach into our community means that you not only are making a symbolic gesture, but you are committed to addressing policies and finance around educational issues that impact our schools. Districts across the state, including ours, are working very hard and with a sense of urgency to address the achievement gap. Not until everyone in the community, whether the legislature or the classroom, takes a responsibility for responding to this gap where we see results. We know what works. We must have the courage and the will to make a positive change for the children of Minnesota. Governor Pawlenty, in the State of the State address, shared 3 R's for high school reform. He talked about rigor, relevance, and results. I agree with his 3 R's. However, I would like to add one more R, and that is for relationships, and to suggest that the 4 R's begin with early childhood and continue throughout high school. Rigor should be embedded into the content areas in all programs, including special education and ELL. Meeting standards are a minimum expectation that we must have for all of our children. We have with us tonight our nationally recognized high-tech girls society program from North High School. It's one of our quality career and tech programs that we're very proud of, that we'd like to share with you tonight. And I'm going to ask that group to please just stand, and just because we don't have a lot of time. Thank you so much. We also know how important relevance is critical to connecting students to learning at all ages. Relationships bring us together, like we are here tonight. It takes everyone to care about the success of our students. One of my favorite philosophers says, what the best and wisest parent wants for his or her child, that must be what the community wants for all its children. Anything else destroys democracy. Results. We must require excellence at all levels. We know it works. We must have the courage and the will to make the changes for the children of Minnesota. Tonight, I had an opportunity to share the accelerated plan for academic achievement with our school board and with our community. I identified specific strategies that will close the achievement gap and accelerate achievement for all students. These strategies include a standards-driven curriculum, working with the community and other research institutions to identify strategies to support learning for all of our students. We have examples of rigor and relevance in the Minneapolis public schools to share with you tonight. Several of our Northside schools are here today, and they embrace the four R's: rigor, relevance, results, and relationships. Tonight we have with us Benice Young, who's the principal at Hall Elementary School, and she has a student here, Centrell Stewart, who would like to greet you in Chinese. Centrell?
Ni hao, wa shi shui, wa shi, ni hao, wa shi shui, ni shi, I'm asking you what's your name.
Well, obviously I don't speak Chinese, but my name is Olivia Johnson. And we also, thank you, Sanchel. We also have students from middle school years program with our IB program, and that's Thurisen Ankov. She's here. I'm not pronouncing that correct. I apologize. And from Henry High School, we have Joanna LeVay, Natasha Mitchell, and Andrew Moore. And we also have Taylor and Bryce Ratliff, who I take credit for because they attended Hall Elementary School when I was the principal. I know you don't have time to hear from these students or from their parents or their teachers or their principals who are here tonight, but I know that if they had an opportunity to talk about the International Baccalaureate program that is in place at Hall Elementary School, Northeast Middle School, and at Henry High School, they would talk to you about how IB is a proactive approach and a reality for students in a global society, how IB is based on international standards, not local standards, international standards, and how IB connects students to the world, and how students are beginning to speak a world language, and at Hall, the example with Central, she's speaking Chinese. Creative action is also explicitly taught and practiced and is transdisciplinary in that the students learn at a meaningful high level. We know that what works, it just takes the courage to do what needs to work for our students. I'd like to at least have the principals from the school stand because they really are the instructional leaders for their schools. If they're in the audience, I know that you have a copy of the PowerPoint that I provided from tonight's presentation with the school board, as well as a PowerPoint from Chief Coleman and some of our achievement data that you can use to look through later. I'm going to actually turn it over to Chief Coleman so she can give you some comments as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, committee members, and might I also express my delight to have you here in our community, and I say our community because not only do I work here, I also live in this community. I want to read to you a quote that was in the Star Trip, January 10th, 2006. Governor Pelini wants to borrow $123 million for new public safety projects, mostly to expand lockups at Moose Lake and Faribault. Minnesota's prison rolls are among the fastest growing in the nation, but its incarceration rate, state inmates, as a percentage of the overall population, is one of the lowest. The rationale for the request was given. We want to increase the space so we can incarcerate more people, he said, outlining his latest capital investment bonding proposal on Tuesday. That hit us all as educators right between the eyes. We certainly understand the need to have a safe community, but we also understand that it is much more important that we focus before we get to the stage of prison and really talk about how do we invest in our young people so that we're talking about graduation rates increasing as a way to eliminate the need for costs of building prisons. You just heard our academic framework for instruction. And we certainly understand that effective instruction is fundamental to any school's mission. But we also know that for many of our kids, they need some things other than just the academic focus. The reality is that there are many barriers for many of our kids who prevent them being successful in the classroom. Teachers in low-performing schools talk about students feeling unmotivated to learn and also about being actively disengaged from the learning process. This is not surprising when we understand the many challenges and social issues outside of the classroom that many of our kids face. The reality is, in too many classrooms, improved instruction is just not sufficient, especially when our schools are clustered in very high poverty areas. Many schools continue to be plagued by student disengagement, behavior problems, and dropouts. To the degree feasible, many of our schools make valiant efforts to provide some support. We are very blessed in Minneapolis to have the support of our county services with us, a mayor who backs us, that really stand behind us, and we're working with our chief of police to address issues of safety in our community. But unfortunately, the idea about supports for learning is often an afterthought. We're here together, and we are being very purposeful in Minneapolis public schools to say we don't talk about one without the other. So when we say learning supports, what are we talking about? We're talking about the need to improve schools by looking at student attendance. We're talking about how do we increase the academic engagement and performance. We're talking about increased family involvement with students and schools. We're talking about reducing tardies, reducing misbehavior, bullying, and sexual harassment. We're talking about fewer student pregnancies and fewer suspensions and dropouts. We're doing many things in these areas, like enhancing the capacity of teachers to address learning and behavior and emotional problems within the context of the classroom. How do we get our kids re-engaged in classroom learning, fostering that social, emotional, and intellectual behavior development that we know many of our kids need. Many, many things that you heard Chief Johnson refer to. But we're here to say today that we see that there is a role where you can help. And it is about how we start to think differently about what helps to make our children successful. MCLB is very specific about addressing our academic areas. But we're saying we still have an achievement gap in spite of those efforts, so we have to think broader than that. What we're suggesting is the need to work much more collaboratively at each school and within the district level of focusing our resources to minimize duplication and fragmentation, coordinating and collaborating services to the extent necessary at the state education agencies, with agencies providing services to our young children, to youth and families within the state who've been identified under Section 1116, and requesting assistance to have some of these major factors that are barriers addressed in a much more collaborative way. Also, developing aids for districts and schools to rethink the roles of pupil services and personnel as not an afterthought, but being very integral to the process for learning for many of our kids who experience these kinds of barriers. We believe that we can all together make a difference in the lives of our children. We don't see it as an add-on, we see it as a mandate. We are excited to have you here in our community. We believe
that us all coming together, we can come up with a better plan and help our community, help out our governor, who we understand, all of you have the concern about safety. But we believe if we invest in our children earlier, much earlier, and in a coordinated way, we can eliminate the need for that $123 million for prisons, but they can go into school aid. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Now we have a Minneapolis teacher, Lee Schwanke. Thank you. This is where we start at 2 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. and Madam Chair, my name is Lee Schwanke. I'm here tonight serving the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. And I brought with me some teachers from Minneapolis that would like to invite you into their classrooms. On top of your green folder, you found a card. I request that on the back of that card, you could write contact to visit the classrooms and children in Minneapolis. And I know how it can be difficult to, you know, find your way around a city that you may not be familiar with, and my job is to help you get there. Okay? Without further ado, the teachers.
Sarah Mealy, I teach at Northside Magnet School and live in the north side of Minneapolis.
I'm Anne Leverson. Okay. I'm Anne Leverson. She's 4th and 5th grade at Dowling, and I also live in Minneapolis.
I'm Laurel England. I teach kindergarten at Dowling. I have 2 half-day sessions, a morning class with 26, and it's just me, and an afternoon class with 26, and it's just me. And I also live in Minneapolis.
I'm Karen Utter, and I teach at Seward Bonifore on the south side, and I also live in that area.
I'm Sharon Ornelas, and I teach English as a second language at Patrick Henry High School, a concurrent enrollment program where our English as a second language students can earn college credit through the University of Minnesota, and I'd love to invite you to come see my classroom and see the amazing things that are happening in those high schools.
Hello, Heidi Bajan. I am a kindergarten teacher at Jordan Park, right here on the north side. Please do not make any decisions about education without coming to a classroom. Any one of you, all of you are welcome in my room anytime, any day.
And as you can see, there are gentlemen in education, long ladies to go first. Martin Boucher, I teach over Jenny Lind on the north side, teaching 4th grade, currently 31 students, coming and going. I also am the high school wrestling coach at Henry High School, that's what I know, Bob. I've been teaching for 13 years in Minneapolis. I invite every one of you to come in to see what it's like, to see what the education is about, the dedicated teachers, and the difficulties we encounter every day. I think you get a really good eye opener.
Good evening. I'm Greg Nielsen. I'm proud to have John Benson representing me out of Plymouth, Minnetonka, but I teach in the Phillips neighborhood at Anderson Open School. I've been there since 85. I teach 6th grade science, and my door is open to you anytime, but if you do come to my classroom, roll up your sleeves, because I'm going to put you to work. Thank you.
My name is Ken Breland. I'm a science teacher at Northeast Middle School. Earlier you met one of ours who stood up, Clarissa Wynn. We're the MYP school, or one of the MYP schools, pre-IB. So if you'd like to see some science, my room's open anytime. I do other things. I'm one of Jim's faithfuls, so please stop in.
The same invitation that these teachers have issued to you is open for many teachers in Minneapolis. We would love to have you in our classrooms to see the great things that are going on. The teachers in Minneapolis, as you've heard from a variety of experts, but now you get to hear from us, are confronted with a group of wonderful, beautiful, smart, intelligent, capable children. But goodness sakes, they need your help. and we need your help to do the job that we have been asked to do and that we are blessed to do. So please, take the invitation of these folks and come visit our kids and our classrooms, and you will see the great things that are happening in Minneapolis and the better things that can happen if you give us the help that we need. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments and invitations. I'm sure some of us are going to take you up on that. Also in the audience is our City Council President, Barb Johnson. She's somewhere out there. There she is. Welcome, Barb. Our next individual is Eric Pond. He has 2 minutes. Is he around, Eric? Also, we're going to call two at a time. Claudia Fuentes, she's representing the mayor's Ryback office. Claudia?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is my pleasure to address you on behalf of the parents and particularly the District Parent Advisory Council for the Minneapolis Public School Board. There are a few of us here. If you guys are a member of DPAC, if you could just stand up if you're sitting right now. We're a group of 30 parents from all over the city of Minneapolis that come together to advise the superintendent, his staff, and the school board on the myriad of challenges that they face in the upcoming year. And it is my pleasure and honor to do so. And in sitting before you, it reminds me of my very first time testifying, which was in my senior year of high school. Many of you are probably familiar with Bill Middlefelt at Anoka Senior High School. One of the things he does with his senior honors class is that he makes us create a bill and take it to you guys and testify and lobby. And that was my first experience and exposure, and I want you to know that it was a teacher that first exposed me to that. It was a teacher that brought me down. It was a teacher that is the reason why I'm sitting in front of you today. Education is absolutely critical in the development of that. I will be focusing my comments particularly in areas of equity and parental engagement. The group of parents in North and Northeast Minneapolis, we have been meeting monthly for the last several months, and we have three primary focuses. The first is communication of academic and testing standards. And how do we do that to parents in normal English? It's a challenge for us to take the information we've been given and to communicate that level. And I would ask you that as you focus on making your modifications and increasing the funding, but could you please do it in plain English? Can you do it in English that a normal human being who only gets to hear that 2-second blurb on TV can understand what they're doing and turn to their child and say, here's what my legislator is doing for me? It is hard to engage with you when the language is not clear. We also talk a lot and we're focused on equity and pathways. Define paths that, when communicated appropriately to parents, let them know what their kids will learn, where their kids will learn it, and at what stages of their life their kids will learn it. We are focused, in particularly in North Minneapolis, on making those far clearer for our parents. We have many parents in our community that move around a lot. Economic challenges, family challenges, relationship challenges. That the thing in many kids' lives that is the one staple, the one bedrock, the one stable element in their lives is their school. And it's absolutely critical that they understand. So please, as you focus on equity, remember, not all things are created equal. Amongst African-American children, there is a defined gap that needs to be closed. We ask for additional funding for that. And take your pen for just 10 more seconds. The last area is parental engagement. Safe communities are engaged communities. Talk with us. Keep us engaged in plain English, and we will engage with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. also Lawrence Holloman, would you come on up?
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for coming. I'm Claudia Fuentes. I work with Mayor Archie Dryback, and he apologized that he can't be here tonight. He's got another commitment. Of course. The mayor apologized that he can't be here this evening. He's got another commitment. I want you to know that I also have a child in the Minneapolis public schools, and I live and work in Minneapolis, so these issues are critical for me as well. I basically have 3 points that I want to make. The first is I applaud all of your efforts to promote early childhood education. The mayor has been very aggressive in supporting initiatives like Way to Grow as a means of preparing parents and children for lifelong learning. And the second point I want to make is that in any way that you can influence opportunities to employ our youth in meaningful jobs, like step-up jobs, when you go back to your private job so that you can have them in the summer to recruit and retain interns from the city of Minneapolis, it goes beyond having a job. If we can place young people from Minneapolis, in meaningful employment, people will see them more as just another choice of a source of cheap labor, but as our future, essentially. And then the last point I wanted to make, and Carlos alluded to it, Mr. Mariani alluded to it earlier, is that we have over 100 languages in the Minneapolis public schools, and the children of Minneapolis cross cultural borders every single day. This is a great potential here, not only for the children themselves, but for our entire community when you view the global economy and globalization, where success is completely dependent on interacting with people unlike ourselves. So we have a very strong future workforce here, if you could just close the learning gap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ray Wyvall, right after Lawrence. Lawrence is first. No. Lawrence, you're first.
Good evening. I don't mind yielding. Thank you all for coming here. My name is Lawrence Holloman, and I've been a local 87 member of Carpenters for 13 years. Oh, yes. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying my name is Lawrence Holloman. I'm a union carpenter, member of Local 87. And when it comes down to disparity, I have to say that there are projects going on in our community, hundreds of millions of dollars, and there are no minorities on the project. People, for the most part, are more persuaded by what they see than what they hear. There's a lot of pretty words in these contracts that say, because it's a state contract, you know, you have to hire X amount of minorities. The truth of the matter is that the budgets have been cut so tremendously that there's no oversight. And by the time that the project starts and finishes, the only thing that you guys know is what's written on the paper that they give you and say that, oh, we've done everything you said. Truth of the matter is, it's not being done. I'm not asking for you to really change what's been happening. I talked to a lady back here, and she reminded me of a word, hope. There's a project called the Brown Power Base Project. And let me just share a little bit of my hope. My hope is through education I can get my own contractor's license. I'm hoping that with their help, I'm going to be able to secure some small projects. Even all these little houses around here that are boarded up and all that, I can build anything from a footstool to a parking ramp. Let me teach these people how to work. Let me teach them. Give us the opportunity to use the resources that we already have before we start asking you for more. Let us prove to you that we can work. Let us prove to you that I'll put their geometry skills to work. I promise you that. I just needed to say that disparity in the construction industry is horrendous. It needs to be policed. The idea of having Knudsen, McGuff, these multi-major contractors police themselves is not working. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. After Ray Verbo, Mary Bach.
Joe Mullery, Bart Johnson, where I live across the tracks here in North Minneapolis, you are taking very good care of our children, and they are being educated very well, so I don't have too much to say about the particular place where I come from. However, I do want to address myself to the upstate educators that are here tonight, particularly the teachers, because as a matter of fact, not only the children that have been left behind, but the teachers that have been left behind, like myself, I have an education at the University of Minnesota. I have attended Berkeley. I have a degree from San Francisco State University, all in teaching, art education, and so forth. So I say to you that there aren't only those people that have, not only the children that have been left behind, but also the teachers that have been left behind that we need to worry about. And that we need to, as I am doing, I'm going to Riverland College. I got all of March. I've got all the art situations that I need there, the classes that I need there. I'm going to be teaching not only in English but also in Spanish. I believe that we have been left behind as far as teachers are concerned. I want you to join me out there to outreach to the people, to teach those people that have been left behind, and to stop cheerleading and giving everybody credit for things that they have never done. As a matter of fact, my 2 minutes are up, so I want to say this to the legislators that are here tonight. And I said it to them many times before, although the newspapers don't like to cover it, the fact of the matter is that you're deja vu to me. We have asked you for years and years, as a matter of fact, to give us some equity as far as education is concerned, and all you want to talk about is stuff that is happening in your own backyard. Yeah. Let's take the whole state into consideration, and let's join the people that are out there already, and let's educate the people. I thank you very much. I love you. And there has to be a revolution in education. You got that? A revolution in education. Thank you, Ray Robo. Mary Bob.
Chair Garland, Chair Mariani, members of the committee. My name is Mary Bach. I'm a Minneapolis public school parent. I do contract work for the district. I live in the city, and I have a business here. It's been mainly positive comments, and of course, most of my time I spend making positive comments about the school district, writing grants and whatnot. At the same time, there's a great level of frustration with the parts of the district that aren't working. So I would like to address that because I think we are talking about the achievement gap. In fact, this weekend I read an article in Minneapolis St. Paul magazine where one of our city council members said that he has said, burn North High down. And I had to swallow hard on that because I'm one of the people who argues that we need to seriously remedy the parts of the system that are not working. At the same time, if I wake up in one morning and a building's been burned down, and I'm one of the people working for quality in the schools, as we all are here, I think I will take that as a personal failure. And I think that we all need to be more courageous, as the chief academic officer said, to do things that we know need to be done. But what can the state do? That's what you're here for tonight. I have a strange request, I guess. I would like to see more monitoring and accountability and even enforcement of parts of educational policy that are in place to protect high-need students and their interests. And I'll give a couple of examples. One is we're supposed to have a system that puts highly effective teachers with the most needy students, and we need to do a better job of that. We need to be monitored more aggressively for our spending of money, and we need to be monitored for implementing programs with great fidelity that have been proven effective. And I think if we do more of that type of accountability, real accountability, that we'll see a change in the achievement. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We also have Representative Mark Olson. Would you like to stand and present yourself? We talked about what district we're all from. What district are you, sir?
I'm from Sherman County area, Big Lake, Elk River, and Becker.
Also, Representative Diane Lossman, she's back in the back room back there from Northeast. Perhaps a suggestion for the people in the back, if you can hold on your conversations because folks cannot hear back there, so we would please, we really would like that, so we can also get the information that we're looking for. Also, our senator's here. Senator Linda Higgins is here now. Now we have an opportunity to the three scouts and scouts leaders from scout troop number 2119, if they'd like to come up. Are they here? You got 2 minutes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. There are three girls that are actually going to be here. They're all Minneapolis public school girls. I really am glad that you guys have decided to do this. It is kind of unfortunate, though, because many of us didn't have very much time to organize this. And for those of us that are youth organizers, we really feel it's important for the girls, for the youth, to be here and to listen, because they are directly going to be affected by the decisions you make this year.
Some schools don't have enough money to pay for school buses, so they have to walk or take metro transit for field trips. School wants is so bad that they don't work enough to eat. Most kids hate the food, but they eat some of it. Some people don't have enough time to make home lunch, so they don't eat during lunchtime. I wish that school lunch was not packaged and stripped. I wish that was cooked right in the schools.
There isn't enough money for schools. And I don't like the fact that teachers are getting fired or laid off, and our textbooks are so old and damaged that a teacher has to duct tape them.
I don't know how much time we have left, but as you can see, these girls are much more wiser and above and beyond what our expectations are, and they are the ones who are going to be affected by what you decide and what you do. And it's also really important, and it's unfortunate, I really hope you aren't the only youth that's here today that's going to be testifying, and that you do have a chance to hear more youth voices throughout this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex Dillon, and Natasha Ashford also.
Chairperson Mariani, Chairperson Freeland, members of the committee, my name is Alice Dillon. I'm a product of public education in the Minneapolis Public Schools. In fact, I went with Willie and his family to grand school here on the north side, I'm proud to say. My grandmother and my parents are all products of the public school system in Minneapolis, and my children went to public schools in Minneapolis. I'm a strong supporter of public education, and I believe that a free and democratic society is dependent upon a free, strong public education. However, I want to speak tonight about some of the things that I'm concerned about that I think have
very strong impact on the achievement gap and how we're going to close it. And these are things that I'm concerned about. One is the way that we're handling truancy with children. We're adjudicating children and making criminals out of them because of truancy. I think that that's absolutely got to be dealt with, and I hope that I can make some suggestions so that you at the legislature can deal with that issue. In addition to that, some of you may be familiar with Tom Johnson and the Council on Crime and Justice. They've done a great deal of statistics, and I was shocked to learn that 25% of all referrals to the juvenile justice system in Hennepin County, and if I stop for a moment, you can imagine how much the juvenile justice system costs in Hennepin County. We're talking about judges, probation officers, court systems, just a huge sum of money. 25% of all referrals to Hennepin County Juvenile Justice System come from the Minneapolis Public School District for disorderly conduct. If we could do something about that money right there, there would be enough money to make an extremely important contribution to the Minneapolis School District in terms of providing assistance to children and their families. The other thing that we've got to do something about is school suspensions. The number of children, and most often children of color, that are suspended from the school system in this state, and because this is the most diverse district in the state, is abhorrent. Some years we've had as many as 500 kindergartners suspended from the public school system. My time is up, but I would like to say I don't only want to bring problems to your attention. I want to suggest to you that as part of your rulemaking, lawmaking efforts, you tie additional funding to, if we're going to talk about incentives, let those incentives be something that will reduce the number of truancy referrals, reduce the number of kids referrals to juvenile justice, reduce the number of children that are suspended. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Victoria Weinberg. Is Victoria Weinberg in? Natasha Ashford, is she here also?
Hi, my name is Victoria Weinberg. I am a soon-to-be parent of a child in the Golden Valley Robbins Hill School District. I also work for Learning Disabilities Association of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. We, my organization has done a lot to collaboratively program accelerated reading achievement for the kids in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Robbinsville public schools. And after working at LDA for 5 years, there's some things that I've become a huge believer in, especially since I'm about to send my child to school. It became immediately apparent to me that the achievement gap started when my son was born, and I began reading to him. And I wasn't sure that I believed that he was really getting anything out of that as a little infant, but given that my background and my support from work, I realized that this is a significant difference. As a four-year-old, he has a huge amount of language and school readiness skills. He has access to excellent preschool programs because of what I'm able to bring. I believe that has a tremendous impact on kids' readiness before they get to the kindergarten. And I believe the next phase of that is full-day kindergarten. And full-day kindergarten for the kids who are most in need, who come from backgrounds where they have kind of the least access to enrichment or reading materials. As libraries have been closed down because of budget cuts, our kids have less and less access to educational enrichment activities as after-school programs have been kind of cut back. You have very meaningful and well-intentioned programs trying to take over academic tutoring with kind of limited resources and limited access to that. I'd like to see full-day kindergarten. I'd like to see high-qualified preschool, early childhood education programs reinstituted after the slash-and-burn budget session. I'd like to see that that we do more long-term financing of schools. So when we put school initiatives and change practices in place that take 3 to 5 years to get off the ground and fully implemented, we're in a biannual budget cycle, and that doesn't help sustain long-term change that people embrace. And I also like the assessment system to build accountability, not just one point in time, but across a year, and the assessment systems be put in place so the teachers get the data just in time. It doesn't help the teacher improve the quality of their instruction to get NCLB testing the fall after they've taught those kids. So we need to have an assessment system that aligns with allowing schools to use the data in a timely manner.
Thank you. Now we have Lifeline Youth Off-Street Ministry of our Letta Jones.
Thank you. This is Mike Link, and it's about 3 young children that want to speak. Do they have, what, 2 minutes and all?
You have 2 minutes, okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Ashira.
Hi, my name is Chisasha.
Hi, my name is Ashley.
Hey, my name is Corey.
Hi, my name is Raven.
Hi, my name is Valetta.
We are with Lifeline Youth Off-Street Ministry, a new charitable organization trying to help underprivileged children receive in all basic needs. We are doing this program because we care about our people and their needs. We are trying to help everyone and anyone we can. We care for all people, black, white, doesn't matter what race. You are welcome in our program. We think everyone makes mistakes, and we want them to get on the right track in life. And we want them to be able to have fun, but not do bad things while having fun. We want our young children to stop thinking it's good to be in gangs, throw up gang signs. We don't want them to think that because they see someone else doing it, they can do it. We want them to stay in high school and graduate. We want them to be able to succeed in life. We want them to help our kids not get pregnant before they're grown. We don't want our kids to be in jail. We want them to stop killing and stop threatening others. Our goal is to help children succeed in life, to have less gang violence, to help educate children, to apply knowledge to children, to help make kids stop getting pregnant early.
Mostly for the school, what we need is like language for is not only English and Spanish, mostly like other language like Japanese. It's not only for the public schools, it's for every school.
Also we need forms like math, reading, computers, and other things.
Thank you. Okay, Lisa Jones and Will Dykel.
Good evening. My name is Rafael Ortiz. I'm here to speak on behalf of Lisa Jones and the Brown Power Base. I am the Executive Director of Austera Hispanic Advocacy and Community Empowerment. And with me is Nick Wallace, who's a research fellow at the Institute on Race and Poverty. We are here to announce the launch of the Brown Power Base. The Brown Power Base is a concept which we've developed in order to address the issues of inequity and increasing segregation in the schools of the state. The Brown Power Base would be a network of parents, children, who would come together to deal with issues of segregation and other forms of educational exclusion. We understand segregation at not only the spatial segregation of children of different racial backgrounds into different schools, which is becoming more and more prevalent today, but more broadly, segregation can be understood as any systematic practice or structural pattern that limits the educational experiences of children of a particular social group, be they African American, Latino, any other race, or girls. So we are here to call on the community to get together behind the Brown Power base, to become part of it and become active in a movement that is going to try and is going to change the way in which education is addressed in this state. Thank you.
Thank you. Also in present is our fifth ward council member, Don Samuels, who's in the back there. Don Samuels, welcome. Phyllis Sloan, also, come on up. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Will Dyke. I'm a doctor. I work across the street. I've worked there for the last 21 years at North Point. Many factors have been identified as contributing to student achievement gap, and these include the quality of educational services, possible teacher biases, parental involvement issues, lack of sensitivity to cultural and racial issues, etc. At times, mental health issues are also contributing factors. Some students have been inappropriately identified as having mental health problems when, in fact, they were simply behaving in a culturally appropriate manner and were misdiagnosed as having a disorder that they did not have. However, there are other students who have unidentified mental health disorders such as clinical depression or other mood disorders that do impede their ability to learn. If these disorders are treated effectively, academic achievement improves. Unfortunately, there's a significant problem with access to children's mental health services in Minnesota. Here are four things that legislators need to be aware of so that this can result in actions that can solve this problem. Number one, despite all the media attention to the access problem, there is no public awareness that the lack of mental health access for children is a violation of state statutes. Minnesota law requires HMOs to have both geographic and timely access to mental health services. Their contracts are overseen by the Minnesota Department of Health. The access is not being tracked by the department, to my knowledge, and the contracts are thus not being effectively enforced. Number two, health screening. All children and adolescents aged 0 to 21 on Minnesota care or medical assistance are entitled to periodic health screening called EPSDT or child teen checkup, including mental health screening. Reviews by the Department of Human Services indicates that more often than not, no screening occurs. One commission study found that 94% of eligible kids did not receive the full screening. The HMOs are being paid to screen, but if the screening doesn't occur and problems aren't found, then no treatment takes place. Costs of the problems are thus shifted to school districts and counties, and oversight and accountability lays with the Department of Health and Human Services. I'll be quick. Reimbursement rates, DHS, sets the rate for medical assistance so low that people cannot provide the services necessary to treat children, and this has to be addressed. They are the mental health authority, and they set the rates too low. And finally, chemical abuse and dependency issues. There's a tremendous need for these services to take place, especially for children and adolescents who have abuse, and the services are not out there. They're supposed to be provided and overseen by the Department of Health. How you can be able to affect state departments so that there is accountability and appropriate access to services for these kids. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Also, Melissa Tucker.
Good evening. Honor to the co-chairs as well as to the committee members. Years ago, when Martin Luther King was first stabbed, they said that they were, a young woman said she was so glad that he didn't sneeze because if he had sneezed, it would have killed him. I am so glad that North High was not burned because I would not have graduated in 1976 if it had been burned down, Mary Bach. So anyway, I'm an early childhood educator, and I many people see it as childcare. Some of you know that many of our programs exist and are viewed as small nonprofits throughout communities. That's the problem, I think, with viewing, again, in an isolated way, early childhood. As you look at early childhood, E through 12, I ask you to sincerely do that and do that in a way that is not about theory and is not necessarily about philosophy, but is about best practices in community-based agencies, because it's not only the public schools who can do early childhood or should do early childhood. As Ms. Johnson said early on, it's about relationship, that first intimate relationship when a parent passes their child on to an early childhood caregiver and then expects that child to nurture them, because all parents, for the most part, must do, you know, have jobs out, must go to work. And it's taking two parent families to make ends meet, and many people in my community do not have two heads of household. So for that one person to be away where they are off and must go to work and their child has to be somewhere that is a nurturing, loving, caring, educating place, inspiring their child and fostering that learning, so that we can do an appropriate transition then as that child comes out of early care and education and then on into the public school system. Please do acknowledge also that early care and education is linked with the family's ability for housing and employment. If one of them goes, all of them go. And for our families throughout this community, it's not a downward spiral, as is often talked about. It's a plummet, an immediate plummet, and it's devastating, and particularly to the children. And we all know the indicators of poverty and how significant those are impacting our children, and that's what many of the public school teachers are seeing, as well as early childhood educators and Head Start teachers and administrators seeing also throughout our programs. The disease is not a disease of the children. It's a disease of children being the indicators of what's happening in our society. So again, around employment, around housing, around public schools and the work therein, and early childhood and education, please see that this is kind of a comprehensive scope of care that has to happen for all families and function appropriately. Otherwise, children will consistently lose out continually.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa Tucker and Rebecca Thomas.
Good evening. My name is Melissa Tucker. I'm a parent with three children. I have a four-year-old that's involved in the Head Start program. I have a six-year-old now that's a kindergartner with Wyndham Dual Spanish Immersion Program. And I have a 13-year-old that goes to Falwell Middle School in seventh grade. And I wish that I knew what I know now when my son was younger with the early childhood education, that through PICA, through different programs and different opportunities, I'm learning how to network and be more of an advocate for my family and for my children. My 13-year-old has behavioral issues that, as the doctor spoke from North Point, was not caught in time, and I have been advocating for him all along, but every time I get up to play, the school district comes up, but there's another hoop that I got to go through to get my son the help that he needs. The classrooms are so large that we don't learn anymore. The kids are just in there like cattle, and they're just guided through, and they get through. They don't learn their capitals like we used to when I was growing up. They don't have the spelling bees. They don't have a lot of the things that we grew up with that we know are important, that make us stronger Americans, that make us stronger citizens, to want to get out and vote for all you people that are here. The only reason you're here is because we got up and we went out and voted. Otherwise, you guys would not be sitting here listening to us. And I want people to realize how important it is that we do get out and vote, and that we do thank you for doing what we need you to do. Bring the meals back to the kids, that the kids are at school smelling the good cooked foods in the schools instead of seeing the styrofoam trucks come in. And just bring it back to what we grew up with. The money's there. Instead of sending all the money overseas, let's bring it back to where it needs to be at. Thank you.
Rebecca Thomas and Nico Alexander.
Hello, my name is Shalita Thomas, and I'm a policy council delegate for PICA, Parents and Community Action, and I have a three-year-old son, and I work in Hennepin County also as a caseworker.
And I see that there is a gap in between the school and community agencies. And I also noticed that if there could be a bridge in between that, and what I mean by that is for parents, they shouldn't have to take time off work or wait till something tragic comes in their life that they have no control over, like being laid off or something, to have to come down to Hennepin County to get economic assistance. I mean, since my son has been in Pikeville, when we do the main application to apply for PICA Head Start, there's different questions that they do ask, and then you get a packet of resources. So you don't have to take that time off to take time off work to go down to the county, which you're not going to be eligible for because you make over $800 a month. You're not going to be eligible for any of the programs. So I think there needs to be more of a bridge between the schools and the community agencies where the schools can do referrals for the parent before the plummet and the black hole happens, before a parent has to quit their job and get a lower income just to get assistance. I think there needs to be more community programs for parents that are trying to work and get over $2,000 a month in gross income or a certain type of income. And I see that that is really a problem. Also, I see that the parents, some people just don't know about these programs, and you shouldn't have to go through it to know it. And it's kind of sad that I meet different people that have to go through it to know it. And so I think if we could bridge that gap when parents are different people come in and do the applications for the schools, apply for the schools, that the resource packets go out so then certain people can know, not just a certain color, but everyone can know. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lisa Alexander. Also, I just want to make mention another individual that's in the audience, Burgess Jones, a longtime principal of Franklin Middle School, of North High School. He's back there. And it, how you doing, Bruce Jones? Good man. Right after Rico Alexander is Jose Santos Jr.
Good evening, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Rico Alexander. I'm with Parents Committee Action Head Start Program, and I too was a North High graduate. And I can tell you, it'd be hard to burn that building down without a break. What I want to tell you this evening is that my hope and dream, you asked what our hopes and dreams are. Mine is that we can continue to fully fund programs that we know work. In some cases, some programs don't need to be reinvented. Many studies are showing that, and we sometimes forget that, many studies are showing that if we really want to reduce the achievement gap, one of the best investments we can make is in early childhood. You've heard that over and over again tonight. And the best model for doing that, provide the services in the poorest communities, is Head Start. We've been doing it for over 40 years, and we have somehow forgot that when we start talking about early childhood education. Head Start children, winter kindergarten, are at 90% of the Minnesota benchmark standard for third grade reading proficiency. That's compared to 75% of children who have received early childhood education other than Head Start, and who are on free and reduced lunch. Something you should know about the free and reduced lunch is that we're not comparing the poorest kids with the poorest kids. When we talk about poor kids, we talk about free and reduced lunch. To be eligible for Head Start program, you have to be at or below poverty. That's 100% of poverty. So that means if you're a family making $21,000 a year, you're not a family of four, mind you, you're not eligible for Head Start. We need to get that word out. You're not at 130% of poverty. You're not at 185% of poverty. 100% of poverty, you're eligible for Head Start. Anything other than that, you're not. I'm sure that many people in this room will support... Wow, that was fast. Many people in this room will support legislation that you provide as long as it serves the poorest kids first. I think we all can agree on that. And if we really want to make an impact on education, on health, and on economic disparities, let's fully fund Head Start. Thank you.
Thank you. And Marvin Booker is after that. Welcome.
Buenas noches, me llamo José Santos, y me da gusto que ustedes están aquí con la gente. My name is José Santos, I'm the Executive Director of the Familia Guidance Center. I'd like to thank you for coming to meet the people. My concern is I would like the E-12 Policy Committee and the K-12 Finance Committee to look at making sure we address the disparities in student support services for our students. I am looking at culturally appropriate mental health services for our communities. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul Public Schools have room for improvement. And I think you've heard folks talk earlier. I mean, when 500 kids from kindergarten get suspended, or Minneapolis Public Schools has 25% of the referrals to corrections, I mean, that does address the culturally appropriateness of these schools. I mean, when both Minneapolis and St. Paul Public Schools, 75% of the kids are kids of color. I mean, I don't think we're providing the services to the needs of these communities. And again, we want to work with the schools and we want to work with the communities. Both school districts, you know, they do some good things, but mental health is culturally appropriate. I mean, when you hear so many kids being sent to these places, they're not being addressed by people like ourselves. So I hope as you guys make your policy and funding that you make some kind of attachment that when you look at the populations of the kids, because as we talk to the different school districts, I mean, everybody points fingers at somebody else, and, you know, I'm told that it's you guys. And again, it's not to condemn anybody, but you know what? We're tired of getting running around in circles as our kids are not graduating from school, and if they have their needs met, we will close the gap academically. So I just hope you guys look at that, and like I said, I'm more than willing to partnership and work with the school districts, but when we partnership and we collaborate, we also need funds. Okay, we can't do it for free. So I hope you guys look at that, and thank you very much again for coming to our community. Thank you.
All right, we're coming to our 8:30 mark. We got 5 more minutes, so is Marvin Butcher in?
That'd be Boucher. Boucher, French name. And I'm going to yield the mic, but before I do that, I want to say I invite a 1 to approximately 30 ratio to my classroom.
Mark Cosmos?
Thank you very much, committee members, chairs. I appreciate the time I've got to speak tonight. My name is Mark Cosmos. I live at 35th and Lindale, North Minneapolis. I went to Minneapolis Washburn High School and the grade schools and junior highs in Minneapolis. Graduated in 1975. And I'm the last of an era because I went to the schools at Washburn in the same neighborhood as R.T. Ryback. There was no R.T. Ryback in my school. He went to private school. And I went to school with multi-millionaire. The kids had multi-millionaire parents, and I was one of the poorest kids in the neighborhood, and those days are gone. Because now, through the policies that we've enacted over the last 25 years, we've essentially turned most Minneapolis schools, not all, there's probably still a few places where the people are very mixed together, like when I grew up, and we walked to school, no busing, when I grew up. And through our policies that we've enacted, we've now turned many of the Minneapolis schools, including the school in my neighborhood, City View School, unfortunately, into kind of segregated between poor and wealthy, because so many of the wealthy, you know, their parents send them to the suburbs in different places. And that's not very good. I had a 14.6% property tax increase at my home this year in 2007. I'm proud to pay it for public schools. I do not favor charter schools. I feel charter schools are taking money away from good public education and improving public education to make it what it really should be. So that's one thing I would like to say. I would also like to say, if the children of Minneapolis, if they want to take the school to South Carolina, like Carl Polab is going to do with the Twins, are we then going to enact a sales tax for them and give them $1 billion? No, I don't think we are. And I think that that's a serious issue. The legislature, you know, we're laughing about it, but I mean, this issue of giving billionaire subsidies, people that have billions and billions of dollars, people that make hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and we're giving them subsidies, and we're making schools come and beg at hearings like this, I think that's W for wrong. And I think that funding private militias that we have in our country, Blackwater USA, unlimited checks for them from the federal government, and the federal government is the United States government, it's part of us. We have Amy Klobuchar and Ron Coleman and all these other elected officials there. You know, they run around over there like the money is just made to be spent somewhere else and we should just be ignored. And I'm really upset about that. So thank you very much for the time you've given me, and hopefully you will do something right over at the legislature. Thank you very much.
Paul, please. Paul, please. And Terry Lydell, that's going to be our last two speakers, I believe. Go ahead, sir.
Madam, Mr. Chair, Representatives, thank you for all being here. Thank you for everybody in the community. I'd like to speak about a few things. First of all, you know about everything that's been said tonight. One of the standards for teacher preparation in the state, all teachers have to meet, is understanding the needs of the whole child. And you heard that tonight. So I ask you as a legislature to understand the needs of the whole child, whether that's health care for children, whether that's early childhood education for children, whether that's affordable housing for families. One of the biggest problems that that create problems in this district that I'm a part of, I live in North Minneapolis, and kids go to North Minneapolis schools, is the instability in the classroom and moving around. That's a big problem, and we can help address that. Another big problem is the race gap, not only in achievement, but then who teaches our kids? 80% of the teachers, 80% of the students, rather, in Minneapolis are students of color, but not 80% of the teachers. You don't need, I was a teacher in urban school, you don't have to be effective, you don't have to be a person of color to be an effective teacher, but you have to understand who the kids are and where they're coming from, and the resiliency of urban learning. You can help support getting more teachers of color into our schools throughout the state, because our whole state is diversifying. You can help support that. Lastly, I'd like to ask you to close the opportunity gap. There are standards for student achievement, but there are standards for society and the legislature to provide equal and equitable educational opportunity. That's not about testing madness. My kids are more than a test score. Our kids are more than test scores. We have to fund schools fully, and we start with the schools that are most in need, not just giving the extra money to the schools that are getting the stars, right? But getting the money to the kids in the schools and the teachers who are doing the hard work day after day, in oversized classrooms, in classrooms that don't have new textbooks. We had teachers say, come visit my classroom. Visit their classrooms and visit neighbors' suburban classrooms and ex-urban classrooms. See the disparity. Put your money and invest your money in those students and the resiliency. That's the fifth R, resiliency. This is a resilient community. You invest in it, and you'll reap the benefits for the whole state. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Terry Lydell, and I am the president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. We are a statewide organization of 700 members. Among our membership are people in the area learning centers, the contract schools, the charter schools, the online schools. We have a strong partnership with the Metropolitan Federation of Alternative Programs. In our state, there are 150,000 students who are statutorily defined as at risk, meaning they are pregnant or they are on drugs or they are a year behind in their school, and the list goes on. The gentleman who just spoke before me mentioned the word resilience, and that is exactly what we have to work on with our students. We spend most of our time helping students understand that they do count, that they are worthwhile, and building resilience and hope that they can succeed. That is the pedagogy type of a teacher's license. We have to take a praxis exam on that, but yet it doesn't appear anywhere as highly qualified or needed at all in the classroom, nor is it supported. Those we also take an exam on academic stuff and in each of the subject areas, and what we find is that we are restricted in many ways in which we can utilize the high training that we have. I'm going to go back to the word resilience, and to get there, I'm going to mention a few things that we can very specifically work on as legislators. One is on the money package side. It is funding the extended year and lifting the learning year cap to 1.5, so we have more time to work with students on their resilience and their hope. We would like you to work on giving the English language learners more time to gain proficiency in their new language so that they can understand the test they're taking.
All right.
And we would like you to legislate an interdisciplinary license so that the teachers can work with the students so they can connect what one subject has to do with the other, just like life does. And they'll have more time to focus on the relationship to build the resilience that they need. And we would like to have the legislature stop the pejorative labeling of schools because they don't make AYP and instead focus on resources that will help them get off that labeling.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to all of you who testified tonight. I'm sure that all of the legislators that came out will put this to good work. And also want to say thank you to all of you. It's a privilege to serve you as your representative here in this District 58. I also want to say that District 58 can do a great job because I didn't have to use the gavel for one time. So again, if you want to testify in some of these committees, you're welcome to come up to the Capitol or the state office and testify under these. It is the Finance Committee, the Policy Committee, and now the subcommittee that we're going to be having on student support. So thank you again, and thanks for all of you for coming out.
Can I get 1 minute, please?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Frangina Johnson, and I'm a person who has been here in Minneapolis now for 20 years. I'm a product of, quote-unquote, the ghetto, the hood, whatever you want to say, growing up in a predominantly all-black and Latino community. And I want to say, with all the things that I have accomplished, going to school, becoming an industrial electrician, working in the engineering department, taking kids to Africa so they can understand what it means to have an American education, one of the things that kept me going with all the depression, with all the fighting, with all the drugs, was me going to school. And I always had a 2 to 3 year grade above average. And one of the things, and not our schools were closed down in our community. What was done was that the teachers came to school knowing that they wanted to teach the children in the community so they can have a productive life. So one of the things that, some of the things that I would like to suggest is that you as legislators, a lot of states do this, nobody does this in Minnesota. Maybe 10% of the proceeds from the lottery can go to education as opposed to going to the environment. I believe that our education of our children are just as important as the lakes being clean enough for you guys to go to fishing. Okay? So why can't 10% of that be donated to education to help pay teachers more money, to help bring back creative programs? Because our children have two sides of the brain. You know, there's an academic and there's also a creative part to nurture them artistically. That in the first grade, every child be taken to the library and be given a card so they can understand how to use the library so that when they want to learn something, they know how to go and get it. I have 10 seconds. That the science program be instituted so that children can understand how science really works instead of just making it an option. Time. Consider that making an option that they have a fair for all the county and city schools. Also that physical education be brought back, and also because we are now becoming a strong melting pot, that our children maybe take one culture per month and learn about each other so we will not make
fun of them. We can go on and on. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.